Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am your host, James Anderson. We are brought to you by WinBet, and I'm really pumped for this week's guest. We've got Eric Cross, who basically does exactly what I do, but for Fantrax, and I would strongly recommend moving your Dynasty League to Fantrax if you're not already on there. Really appreciate you joining me, Eric. Sorry we couldn't hang out at First Pitch Arizona this year because I wasn't able to make it, but really appreciate you hopping on the show with me. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure talking baseball and prospects with you, James.
Hell yeah. And today we've got I'm already seeing draft boards. People are already doing their NFBC slow drafts and everything like that. So I thought we'd talk about some hitting prospects who could be relevant at least in 2022. There's not going to be a ton of guys of note who are going to open the year on the big league roster, but I mean, we can go fairly deep with this. We're going to spend a lot of time on the top guys, the big names that could debut in the first half or so. But there's a ton of guys who are obviously going to debut next year, and there's going to be a lot of interesting ADP data that I've got my hands on, thanks to Zach Roto on Twitter. But first, I just want to ask you, Eric, do you have kind of a general tendency when it comes to, let's just focus on hitting prospects and not really worry about the pitchers, but when it comes to like hitting prospects for redraft leagues, I feel like maybe six years ago, you could get decent values on a lot of the best prospects because there was still like kind of an old school, don't draft prospects type of mindset. But I kind of feel personally like that there's just not a ton of value to be found on the prospect side of things in recent years. But what about you? What do you think about hitting prospects when you're doing your redraft leagues? Are you usually going to end up with one or two, or do you usually fade those guys?
It's funny. I used to be one that would get, a few prospects. I was all about the upside, but I've kind of gone more with a conservative approach over the last couple of years. I think I've gotten more and more conservative every year. Is you hit it right on the head, James. I think over the last handful of years, prospects, especially the top tier ones, the elite guys, they've been pushed up a bit in drafts to the point where it's hard to get any return on those guys. They have to hit like 90th percentile outcome to get any return on it. As I think, we've had those rare instances where like, the Acuñas and the Sotos and the Tatises of the world, those guys have kind of caused that. Everyone is hoping they can get the next breakout rookie that they can get next huge star. And, more often than not, it doesn't work out that way. Those are the, exceptions to the rule, not the expectations, as I have always said. But yeah, I found myself becoming more and more conservative in general with hitting prospects. I look at the few of the guys that have, the good hit tool, the good approach, more so than, the strikeout concerns or the lesser hit tool guys that I know will probably be, have a harder time adjusting. So yeah, I guess this, the bigger hit tool guys are the ones I tend to kind of flock towards lately.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're dead on with, last year I took Andrew Vaughn in some leagues. I took Dylan Carlson in some leagues. Yep. Took Ke'Bryan Hayes in at least one league. And really, I mean, even though those guys were up right away, you know, you kind of broke even at best with some of those. And, you know, obviously fabbing Alek Manoah is going to work out. But I mean, you look at what like Phil DeSalt does. I mean, Jeff Zimmerman talks about this all the time, just kind of prioritizing getting plate appearances. That's generally not gonna also align with getting prospects, you know, especially if you're being the person who's stashing Kelnick or stashing Franco. That means like one of your bench spots is someone who you cannot plug in, especially if you're doing NFBC midweek and everything like that. So it's very interesting, but I mean, I think every year inevitably there will be some value on the prospect side of things. And I don't know if that's going to apply to the first guy we're going to talk about. I think Bobby Witt Jr. is kind of in a tier of his own at the very top when it comes to prospects, hitting prospects for just 2022. And again, that'll be the focus of the show today. We're not really going from a dynasty slant here. This is just for redraft leagues. And the data that I was able to get from Zach and John Fish sent me some as well. Basically suggests that Bobby Witt already has an ADP of roughly 73-75. So you know you got to take him, and granted, I mean, these are some draft and holds, so you know any prospect is going to be a bit more appealing in a draft and hold than a regular draft with a 7-man bench. But I mean, Bobby Witt at pick 73, is that higher than you would have guessed, especially just considering we're still in November?
A little bit, but then I also heard that he went in the third round on one of those drafts, so that is too high for me. Even as much as I like Bobby Witt Jr., you know, around 73, so we're talking like what, like the right at the 5-6 turn of a 15 teamer. That's not bad. It's still a bit higher than I'd be willing to go. I was hoping he'd go, which I knew would probably be a pipe dream, like, you know, like the 90 to 100 range, because I kind of consider, it's just me personally, my first like five or six players to be kind of my core, you know, team. Then after that, I could probably take a little more risk than I would in the first handful of rounds. So I'm not saying Witt's a huge risk, but every prospect is a risk to some degree. I said today, like, he could go 2020 in 2022. That's very realistic with his power speed. But at the same time, I was kind of thinking similar thoughts about Jared Kelnick at this time last year. So, and we saw how that worked out. But yeah, 73, and you got to figure closer we get to opening day, the higher that's going to go. I want to see where it is in like February.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was going to say, like, you know, if he, you know, I don't really have any reason to think he won't do well in spring training. That's a, you know, good environment to hit. He's going to face some bad pitching. So, you know, if we get to mid-March and Bobby Witt has some home runs that have gone viral and that type of thing, you can only expect that ADP to keep climbing.
Yeah.
I know there was that report, what was that, John Morosi, which I don't know if you even want to call it a report, but speculation that, you know, they're going to be open to him breaking camp on the big league roster. This is more complicated than ever to talk about because we don't know what the CBA is going to look like. We don't know if they're going to figure out a way for guys like Witt to make that opening day roster and have it make sense from the team standpoint. But you know, kind of what are your sort of vibes in terms of, do you think he's up right away? I mean, let's not forget, like, Fernando Tatis Jr. was up right away. Jason Hayward was up right away. So it can happen. But do you think he's up right away, or do you think it's more of a late April type of thing?
I'm feeling more late April. I just don't see, if Kansas City was looking like they'd be a contender, then I'd be more inclined to think opening day with him. But, you know, obviously they're probably not going to contend unless they really surprise next year. So really, especially for that kind of small market team that doesn't really shell out the big bucks in free agency, getting that extra year at the end of Bobby Witt, I think will be really appealing to them. So, but then again, if he just absolutely crushes in spring training, that could really force their hand, because, you know, they already kind of teased it last year.
You know, like, you know, we could bring Witt up early. Obviously, that didn't happen. And I think that was more just to appease the fan base than anything else. But if they kind of do that same thing again and then don't bring him up, they might hear from their fans. Not that that should make their, you know, make their decisions for them. But, yeah, I think if he's on it by, like, the end of April, I'd be shocked. But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think they thought they were going to be more competitive than they were last year. And yeah. I honestly thought they would be, you know, I thought they were going to kind of have the type of year that the Tigers had. And they were not quite as successful. I mean, there's just, it's really tough. I think there's all kinds of avenues for him to actually break camp with the big league club. The CBA could allow that to happen. He could sign a long-term extension before opening day. We've seen that happen in recent years. And I mean, he could make it easier for them to offer him that type of extension with a big spring. They did kind of hint down the stretch last year with the way they used Adalberto Mondesi that they're not really counting on him as an everyday player, just from a durability standpoint. So I really don't know. I think it's, you know, 50-50 maybe that whether or not he breaks camp or doesn't break camp. But let me throw some names at you, like some middle infielders who I think might be going later than Witt. And let me get your take on whether you'd rather roll the dice on Witt or take these guys. Okay. How about Bobby Witt versus Jazz Chisholm just for 2022?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think I'll lean Witt because obviously Jazz has his own inconsistencies with the hit tool and the approach. So I'd probably lean Bobby Witt there.
How about Bobby Witt versus Jorge Polanco?
Polanco's so underrated every year. I might actually lean Polanco, to be honest with you. That one's very close, but Polanco's, like I said, so underrated. He had a really good year. I think he's going to be underrated in drafts again, so I might lean Polanco.
How about Bobby Witt versus Dansby Swanson?
Oh, I love me some Dansby. I'll go Dansby here too. I think he's, you know, he was pretty inconsistent with the batting average. The counting stats were pretty solid. I think he's a better hitter than, you know, the average would indicate this year. So I'll go Dansby there as well. These are all pretty close though.
Yeah, and personally, I would take all three of those guys over Witt, just for 2022. I have no idea what the ADP is going to look like in terms of those four guys, but you know, you don't, I think like roster building is so fascinating to talk about. I just think it's just really tempting to me to just bank value in those kind of first 8 to 10 rounds. You know, you can get upside without going after prospects, which is kind of something that we learn every year and then like forget when March rolls around. Like, you know, Adam Wainwright was a high upside guy where he was going last year. I mean, he's absolutely super old. You know, Jorge Polanco, like people weren't talking about him as like, well, think about the upside though with Polanco, right? Like, you know, no one was saying that. I think it's just one of those things where I am sort of bummed about the way it's going to play out, but I don't really expect to have much Bobby Witt. And I think that will ring even truer if he has a big spring training. Let's move on to this kind of next sort of tier or two tiers, like a tier 1A, tier 2A, tier 2B. I've got 10 prospects here. All of them are, let's just call them all top 50 prospects. Most of them are like top 25 prospects. But Adley Rutschman, Spencer Torkelson, Riley Green, Josh Jung, Nolan Gorman. And then I have a little bit of a drop off to Julio Rodriguez, Brennan Davis, O'Neill Cruz, Tristan Casas, and Gabriel Moreno. And we're assuming, let's just assume a two catcher league here. How do you think about those tiers and how I've kind of broken those 10 guys up? Do you take issue with any of the guys in that lower tier not being up with the top five, any of the guys in the top five not being down a notch? How do you feel about how I've broken those sets of five up?
No, that's pretty much how I would. The only one I might shift around, maybe move O'Neill Cruz up to the top, but this is pretty spot on. I think the top five are all going to be up, you know, first 2 months of the season. especially the, you know, Josh Jung. I think Josh Jung could break camp. Nolan Gorman, there's a lot of talk about him being up. I was talking with Matt Thompson earlier. He thinks Gorman's going to be up, maybe even break camp. And obviously there's not much in the way for Green and Torkelson there in Detroit. So yeah, I think all five of those guys are going to be up by end of June.
Yeah. What do you think about Adley? Cause I was kind of surprised that early ADP data I got from Zach at Zach Roto on Twitter, 253. I have this sense that people are just going to go nuts for Adley in March, maybe in February. Like, you know, he's, I don't know about you, probably the best catching prospect I've ever ranked. I've said this for a while. Like, I think, like, developmentally, he was ready to be up halfway through last season. So I just don't really see the Orioles continuing to kick this can down the road. Man, it would be so depressing if they manipulated his Super 2 and waited till June. But what do you think about Adley for next year?
I really like Adley for 2022 in general, too. I love Adley, and I agree. I think he's, without question, the best catching prospect I've ranked in my time in this industry. I can't think of anybody else that I would put on par with him with the hit tool, the approach, the power, the polish. It's just all the defense. You know, it's all across the board. Like, this is a guy that's got to get some MVP votes in his career, maybe even win an MVP someday. And looking at the, you know, Baltimore's roster right now, the two, like, you've got roster resource on Fangraphs, and the two catchers they have right now projected to be the starter and the backup, Brett Cumberland and Cody Roberts. So, not really anything in the way there. Both those guys are obviously not long-term options. So, yeah, I think he's going to be up soon. I don't know if I'd, you know, draft him as my starting catcher, just in case he's not up right away. And I hate rostering more catchers than I need to, especially in a one-catcher league. But if it's a two-catcher league, I would be willing to take him as my second catcher, even like one of the high-end second catchers, because if I can just, you know, get by with a fill-in until he's up, even if that's like a month into the season, I think the potential he gives you is a number one type of catcher, even a top five catcher. I think he could be that good this year. So I'm going to try to get some shares of Adley this year. We'll see if I succeed in that, though.
Yeah, I think that this early ADP is just, it's not going to hold at all. If you were able to get Adley mid 200s come March, I would, in a two catcher league, I would probably jump on that. You know, we even know, like, you might just do fine even if you just kind of took a zero until he was up, you know.
That might be better than whatever crap you'd have to pick up.
Yeah, or just you take, like, whoever the best backup catcher is that you don't think is going to kill your batting average, and you're just going to wait a few weeks. I mean, do you see any way that he's not up in April at some point, regardless of how the CBA shakes out?
I don't. I really do see him up early. Like, you know, he got up to AAA last year, 43 games there, hit .312, .405 OBP. So he's ready. I don't think there's anything left for him to prove. So it would really, really shock me if he's not up by the end of April.
And then these Tigers guys, you know, I think Spencer Torkelson has the much bigger, I think, just general name value, especially among, like, the redraft crowd, you know, number one overall pick. People know who Spencer Torkelson is. Obviously, the dynasty crowd knows exactly who Riley Green is. But how big of a gap, if any, do you see between Torkelson and Green for next year? Do you think that they debut together? Do you think that they're just kind of on this same exact path? And obviously, as the faces of the future there in Detroit, they might just debut kind of around the exact same day.
Yeah, I think their debut is going to be pretty similar, like within a few weeks, I'd say. It's funny, they actually played the same amount of games at AAA last year. Both played 40 games for Toledo. I actually, you know, I love both these guys. They're both inside my top 10, which is pretty much universal at this point. I like Green a little bit more now. You know, obviously Torque has the huge, huge power, solid enough hit tool. But Green, I think, is slightly better pure hitter. I think he'll hit for a higher average. Power, obviously, is not on Torque level, but, you know, Green's no slouch there. I think Green could be like a 25 to 30 homer bat in time. And then he brings the speed aspect that Torkelson doesn't bring, even if it's just a 10 to 15 steals, that's still, you know, that's still pretty solid. So I think if they're up similar time within a couple weeks of each other, I'm actually go with Green, which is, I think, helpful because I think most people will be going for Tor because he is that slightly bigger name, like you mentioned, number one overall pick, et cetera, et cetera. So I think I'm going to find myself with several shares of Green next year.
Yeah. I don't know if, man, I don't know if I'm going to end up with either of those guys. It's just, it's one of those things where it's just going to be really interesting to watch how they do in spring training.
Yeah.
But I'm right there with you. I have Green ranked ahead of Torque. I think it's super close, but I think there is a, if you're just going to compare who's the better value, Torque or Green for redraft, I think it's definitely going to be Green.
Yep.
Because I just think he's a little bit more under the radar for the redraft crowd. And I agree with everything you said. I mean, Torque, more raw power, but I give a slight edge to Green and the rest of the categories. And obviously there's no, I mean, Green's probably not a plus runner, but he's certainly going to steal more bases than Torque.
Right.
I'm right there with you on Josh Jung being a potential break camp guy, especially if the CBA gets tweaked. And Nolan Gorman, I mean, this, again, this is very rough ADP data, but he was going outside the top 450 in these first couple drafts. I mean, you know, he looked really good at AAA. I kept waiting for the strikeouts, and I mean, he, you know, props to him. He just really cut those into a manageable range. How do you see that Cardinals? Because we know the Rangers have a spot for Young. How do you see the Cardinals making room for Gorman? Where do you see him sort of slotting in?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I was kind of looking at that earlier today. Obviously, I think regardless, Tommy Edman will have a spot on this team. I think the value he provides is really beneficial to St. Louis. So whether he plays a second or short, I think he can play short. So I can see him sliding over to shortstop as their starter there, and then Gorman coming up at second base. Obviously, he's not going to unseat Nolan Arenado, barring, you know, a spring training injury or whatnot. So I think second base is the most likely scenario, but I wouldn't be surprised if St. Louis would bring in somebody to help that middle infield out. But you know, Edmundo Sosa is not the long-term answer there. I think he's better served as a backup utility infielder type. So yeah, I could definitely see if they don't go after, and I don't think they're going to go after one of the big shortstops anyway, the big five, but if they don't get another middle infielder, I could see Edmund shortstop and Gorman up pretty early. And it's funny, I used to be, I think, one of the bigger Nolan Gorman guys, especially after the 2018 draft. I think I had him higher than most, and then I've kind of cooled on him, but he's definitely, like you mentioned, has improved as a pure hitter. Like, you know, he was that huge, huge raw power, but the strikeouts were there. Those have been kind of trimmed consistently over time. I just wonder how much average he hits for, if he's more of a 260 guy with 30 bombs and a handful of steals. But if that comes at second base, that's pretty damn valuable. So yeah, I'm liking Gorman for 2022. Not as much as Green, but yeah. Definitely like Gorman.
And Gorman does hit, he has that type of skill set where maybe it takes a couple years before he's really doing it for us in Roto, because like you said, I mean, could be kind of looking at, you know, you could be looking at like Mike Moustakas ish type of production, but you don't really know where the batting average is going to be. He's not going to run. And you do have that, you know, I think they probably bring in a shortstop of some kind.
Maybe not.
I mean, maybe they roll with Edmund and Matt Thompson is pissed off, and you know, maybe Gorman, maybe the DH comes to the NL and
yeah,
Gorman is the primary DH. But right now it's not a super clean, this is obviously where he plays. So that'll be something to watch. Julio Rodriguez has the second highest ADP, just outside the top 200. And, you know, I mean, he's my number one prospect over Bobby Witt. You know, I think he's just going to be an absolute superstar at some point. But when do you think we see Julio Rodriguez in 2022?
That's the one I've been having the hardest time figuring out, to be honest with you. And he's my number, like, for me, I've I have J-Rod too, but it's like basically 1A and 1B. You can't go wrong either way. They're both in the tier by themselves, him and Witt. Yeah. And I would say if I was ranking on the highest potential to reach their ceiling or upside, wherever you want to, terminology you want to use, I would put J-Rod 1. I think he's the highest floor of any prospect out there, obviously with an incredibly high ceiling as well. Like this could be an MVP type of player, middle of the order bat. But, you know, he only had 74 games last year, missed some time, obviously 46 games at Double-A. So that's the one that I'm kind of staying away from. Obviously I love Julio Rodriguez. I think he's going to be a stud from the get go, but I just don't see him up until mid season. I don't think they're going to rush him. They already have a bunch of outfielders and they're talking about just rumors. Obviously it's just rumors at this point, but maybe bringing in some, Sia Suzuki. I'm not sure how to say his first name. And obviously the Ichiro connection there. So I could see them bringing in another outfielder and rolling with like maybe Suzuki or whoever else they bring in. Plus, you know, Haniger and Kelenic. But yeah, so I'm kind of staying away, especially at that ADP and in the top 225. I'm not liking that.
No, I mean, now again, this is rough ADP, and it is, I think we are talking about just draft and holds with this ADP. So that, I mean, that definitely matters with Rodriguez. You and I play in Tout Wars draft and hold. Is he a guy that you would take inside the top 300 in that OBP draft and hold format?
Yeah, if I can get him closer to that 300, like after 275, I would definitely consider that. But if he's going closer to 200, I'd be out there. Because like I said, if he's not up until, you know, July, which I think is a pretty good possibility, I just don't want to waste, you know, have one of my top, 12 to 15 guys be a guy that I'm only having for half a season. So, but closer to 300, I'd definitely be interested.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be fascinating because, I mean, he's another guy where I think he's just going to rake in spring training and people are just going to just fall all over themselves and be like, I got to get J-Rod. I got to reach for J-Rod here because it's looking like he's the best player in Mariners camp. And then, I mean, if they had the nerve to send him to high A to open last year, I mean, better believe they are going to be willing to keep him at AAA for longer than they should. So I think you're right. I think for draft and hold, he is pretty appealing. You know, late 200s, right around 300, but you're just not going to get him there. I mean, the name value is too high. So, you know, this is, it, you know, if it's all about just having fun and just getting your guys, you know, go nuts. But I just don't really think that's the smart play. And, you know, outfielders, I ended up running into some trouble with my OF5 spot in 15 teamers towards the end of last year. It just dried up. But, you know, on draft day, there are going to be outfielders I like, veteran, boring outfielders who are going to be going in the middle of the 200s who, you know, are going to play every day right away. So even though it is outside the top 200, that is still a pick where you can get some value. What do you think about, you mentioned you'd have O'Neill Cruz up in that top tier, and he did, unlike all of these guys, O'Neill Cruz has made his big league debut already. What's your read on whether they break camp with him, send him back to AAA? When do you think Cruz is back up in the big leagues?
Yeah, first of all, it was kind of surprising to see him get that cup of coffee last year. But as of right now, I think there's a pretty good chance, I'll say 65-70% or so, that he breaks camp as the starting shortstop. And he doesn't have any AAA experience. They called him up from AA. But, you know, he's really, you know, maybe not excelled at every level, but he's performed very well at every level. And I lied, he did have 6 games at AAA, my bad. But still, and he had 5 home runs in those 6 games. So obviously not a lot of AAA seasoning, but, you know, he hit 310 altogether last year, 375 OBP, 594 slugging, 17 home runs, 68 games. So I think they don't have really have anybody else on the roster as of now that could really start over him, or should start over him, I should say. And obviously Pittsburgh's probably not bringing in anybody of note, maybe a stopgap just to have some depth in case he looks bad in spring training, which is possible. But I think he's going to break camp. So, and that power late round, I think he's not going to cost more than a late round pick. Like you even put the ADP on here. I think that 300, 330 range, I think that's probably where he ends up. And a little power from that spot, a little bit of speed too. You can do worse back there. So yeah, Cruz is the guy I'm going to be targeting back there.
So, you know, with him already having debuted, they almost have to manipulate his service time. Unless the CBA gets tweaked to a way that kind of allows it, because, you know, his clock's already started. So if he breaks camp on the big league roster, they would only have six more years with him. If the CBA stays the same. So I don't know. I think it's, and let me get your take on this, or let me ask you, where do you have him ranked overall as a prospect? Because he was the biggest surprise to me of the early guys in Chris Welsh's P1 ADP mocks. I just did not realize until that process that a lot of people had him as like a top 15 prospect. And I definitely get the case, but where do you have him ranked?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I was kind of surprised where he went in some of the drafts. I think he went top 10 and a couple of them. I don't have him quite top 15, but I have him currently 24th. So I think definitely top 30 prospect, no doubt, with what he's capable of and his proximity to the majors.
Do you see a normal sort of amount of early risk here against big league pitching with him? Do you see, I mean, I think the upside is very easy to understand with his power, the fact that he's going to run a little bit. But do you see, like, with just how big he is, how big his strike zone is going to be?
Yep.
Do you see some like big time bust potential early on with him? I mean, obviously, if Jared Kelenic can be as bad as he was, then most of the guys we're talking about could be pretty bad. But like, how do you see sort of the safety and downside with Cruz?
I think there definitely is a big downside, no pun intended, because of his long levers, the huge strikes, and like you mentioned, he's 6'7". He might even be, I think 6'7" might be a little, he might be 6'8", 6'9". I won't be surprised. He looks a little bit taller than 6'7". But yeah, I can see them, you know, major league pitching is the best in the world for a reason. They change eye levels and, you know, bust them up with fastballs and drop the soft stuff down. I think he's going to have, I think the average isn't going to be there. I still think that he'll get some home runs. Like he'll, you know, connect on some, and I think he could be, you know, in a full season, I think he could be like a, I don't know, 20 homer, 10 to 12 steal type. If he gets a full season's worth of at-bats, but that might come with like a 220 average or so. I think it's really good. Yeah. How Pittsburgh wants to handle him in the service time. But I think the average is going to be the part that's not quite there, even though he's always adjusted pretty well in every level in the minors. But again, major league pitching is the best in the world, so I could see a lower average this year for sure.
Also, like, is it just me, or was there a bigger gap than we've ever seen between AAA pitching and big league pitching this past year? I just feel like you saw some guys come up and they were just completely lost. Like, it actually was most guys, almost everyone who made the jump from AAA to the big leagues was terrible, and then would go back to AAA and just be awesome. It just seems like that gap has expanded. Is that just sort of me not knowing what I'm talking about, or did you notice that as well?
No, I definitely did. You're spot on there. It was a lot more fluctuation than we've come to be accustomed to over the last handful of years, just with all the talented young players. Like, yeah, even the top, even look at the guys, some of the guys that are in the running for rookie of the year. You know, even Adelis Garcia wasn't a finalist. I think he should have been, but even he, you saw him have the ups and downs. Obviously, my boy Jared Kelenic was terrible for a good 4 months of the season and had to go back down and then came back up later in the year. Only really two that I can think of that didn't struggle. I'm probably missing somebody, but Jonathan India looked pretty damn good all year, and Wander Franco, and even he kind of had a slower start. He was at like 250 something through the first few weeks, but yeah, I think it's definitely a bigger gap than we're used to. And I can't put my finger on
exactly why though. Like, I don't know, do you have any ideas as to like why that might be?
I just think there were a ton. I mean, there were a ton of really, really bad pitchers pitching at AAA last year. I noticed a gap at between AA and AAA where a lot of hitters were performing better at AAA than they did at AA. And that's like it, you know, regardless of the PCL or the old PCL. I mean, obviously there are some hitter friendly parks at AAA, but you know, just relative to league average, a lot of guys just played better at AAA than they did at AA. And I think that's because there were more pitchers with electric stuff at AA, whereas AAA was kind of, you just had a lot of kind of up and down arms, long relief type of guys pitching there. I think there's a lot of arguments for just kind of ignoring pretty much every person we're talking about on this episode and going for veteran big leaguers, because there's just such a level of uncertainty around how these guys are going to perform, even the very best guys. Let's move down and talk about some sort of less heralded guys. Some of these guys are household names, but let's try to unpack this Royals situation behind Bobby Witt. You've got Nick Prado, MJ Melendez, both just had ridiculous minor league seasons, both finished the year at AAA, both raked at AA and AAA. Then you have Kyle Isbell, who was kind of up and down between the big leagues and AAA. He really finished strong in the big leagues. I think Isbell has a pretty good chance to make the roster as a starter out of spring training. How do you see Prado and Melendez getting playing time this year? And are you interested in them in like a draft and hold type of format?
I am a little bit. I'm actually the most interested in Isbell, as I do agree he has the best chance of breaking camp. Obviously, they kind of have two outfield spots kind of locked up right now with two Gold Glove winners in Benintendi and Michael Taylor. But I can see him slotting in, you know, in right field with them. The other two, even though I like both of them, I moved them way up. They're both, you know, top 50 caliber prospects, I believe. But I got to wonder how they fit in. Like, I know it feels like to me that Kansas City still likes Hunter Dozier and he'll get another shot. You know, he showed up a little bit end of the year. So I think he does get another shot and probably the first baseman. And then even if Witt is up early, like I think we both think he's going to be, that puts him at probably, you know, they said probably third. And I could see them giving Mondesi some time at DH, which would be kind of the pathway for both Prado and Melendez, or at least to some degree. So, and then you still got Nicky Lopez at short. So I wonder if Prado and Melendez, even though they're probably ready, I think they both showed that they're ready with how they performed this year in the upper minors. I think they might be mid-season guys. So Isbell, though, with the sneaky power speed, especially that speed, he showed that he could be like a 25 steal guy in the major league level over a full season. That's a guy that I think I could get, you know, and he's not the huge prospect name. He's never an elite prospect in anyone's rankings, really. So I think that's a guy you can get for a really, really reasonable price, you know, late in drafts that could really surprise.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you could get him well outside the top 350 or so.
Yeah.
It's you know, playing time's the name of the game, and it's tough to see where Prado and Melendez break in, and you know that they're not going to want those guys breaking in as bench players. So
right,
that'll be one to watch in spring training. We got to head to a quick message from our sponsors. When we come back, we will talk about the potential replacement for Buster Posey. If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WynnBET, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WynnBET is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcasts. WynnBET brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down on blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in 6 states, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WynnBET, the possibilities are limitless. WynnBET is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WynnBET now. That's WYNNBET. WynnBET, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcasts. All right, Eric. Joey Bart is a guy who has been on the Dynasty radar and redraft radar for years now. The way is finally clear. Buster Posey announcing his retirement. I am quite low on Joey Bart as a prospect on my top 400. I just think that you're looking at kind of a classic home runs and kind of not much else type of catcher where the batting average is going to be problematic. What's your take on Joey Bart now that he has a chance to get be the primary catcher there in San Francisco?
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're muted.
I bet. yeah, I'm at least intrigued by Joey Bart. You mentioned the power, big raw power. That's the kind of the one part of his game that's remained consistent since he was drafted out of Georgia Tech a few years ago. But yeah, I kind of went from thinking he was a, you know, 50 hit, 60, you know, game power type of catcher to maybe he's 40, 45 hit long term, where he's more of a 240, 250 guy instead of a 270 or so, which I kind of thought he was going to be. And the approach, you know, even though he was never a huge walk rate guy, it's just he's kind of been toiling around, you know, 6-ish%. K rate's kind of gone up since his time in college. Obviously, it's for everybody, it goes up from college. But for him, it's really, he's kind of transformed into a hitter that I didn't think he was going to be, a lesser hitter than I think he was going to be. I still have him top 100 in my prospect rankings, because I think he could be a 25 plus homer bat. But for 2022, I'm more intrigued. He's a guy that I would take as my second catcher. So I think if he can get 20, 25 home runs, that's very valuable from your second catcher, even if the average is only 230, 240. But yeah, I think he's going to be given the chance to start. I don't think they're going to bring in anybody. I really don't see that. I think he could be a decent second catcher this year.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't rule out them bringing someone in. I mean, it would probably be kind of a defense first type of guy. Just kind of a caretaker until they decide Bart or Patrick Bailey's ready. But, you know, it's going to be it'd be a huge step back. Like even if Joey Bart went out there and hit like 245 with 20 homers, you're talking about a huge step back defensively from Buster Posey to Bart. And then obviously offensively, like I don't think it's realistic for Bart to come close to what Posey did last year. So
agreed.
I mean, if the Giants are serious about, you know, trying to win a World Series, I feel like they might have to bring someone in. But you know, we'll see. It's not like bringing in a good catcher is easy to do on the free agent market. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, catcher two and a 15 teamer where you start two catchers, I think that's fine. I would expect him to hurt your batting average in 2022. Arguably the most impressive statistical hitter in all the minors last year was Jose Miranda with the Twins. I think that the most interesting thing to talk about with Miranda is, do you see a way for him to break in early in the season? Like, you know, he's not behind a ton of, you know, big names, guys like Luis Arraez, Nick Gordon, but the Twins really only have one guy in Nick Gordon who can play capable shortstop. So that kind of means Polanco is going to be playing second base. You know, is Miranda going to need an injury to break through?
Possibly, but then again, I don't think that's asking much with this Twins team. Like,
sure.
Well,
he can't play center field.
Right. Yeah. That'd be nice. We know that's about to open up in about, you know, early part of May, unfortunately. But you look at third base with Josh Donaldson, and he's still a decent hitter when he's on the field, but you know, at the same time, he can't stay on the field. Like we've seen that. I don't think he's played 150 plus games in forever. So with him he's not getting any younger either. I think he's almost 36 now, maybe even 37. I think he might be 37 at some point next year. So not getting any younger. These injuries are going to be more and more frequent for him probably. So I can definitely see him breaking through. And even if they move Polanco to short and have Arraez at second, and I'm not a big Arraez guy. So I could see a couple different pathways for Miranda to get everyday playing time early in the season. Yeah, it probably will take an injury, but again, that's not too hard with this team. So a guy I'm definitely intrigued by, more so in the draft and holds, you know, in the 30, 40th round, somewhere back there. But definitely intriguing. As you mentioned, he was just so damn impressive this year. And even it's got better when he went to AAA as well. Just kept hitting for average and power. So definitely one that I got on my list for draft and holds.
Yeah, it's a frustrating depth chart, really, when I look at it, because Miguel Sano's not good. Josh Donaldson, I think they'd love to trade, but they're not going to be able to. Luis Arraez, like I'm there with you. I mean, he can hit for a high batting average, but that's pretty much all he can do.
Exactly.
Nick Gordon, I think, is going to get overdrafted just based on the speed he provided down the stretch last year. You know, I don't know. Can Miranda play left field? You know, they still have Kirilloff coming back and Larnach. I mean, it's one of those where you just wish you could just remove Miguel Sano and Josh Donaldson from the roster and just go all young guys. But
it's gonna be really intriguing to see like how they use Miranda in spring training. That might be telling of how they, you know, their thoughts of him for this year. So that's just something I'll be able to keep an eye on.
What's your take on Bryson Stott, who obviously has risen his prospect star a little bit with what he did or what he's doing in the AFL? The Phillies have a spot for him. You know, if we assume the DH goes to the National League, then Rhys Hoskins is your DH, Alec Bohm's your first baseman, and you can put Stott over at third base. So the decks are clear for Bryson Stott. When do you think we see him?
Yeah, definitely. And I got a couple live looks at him when I was out there last month. And yeah, he was very impressive. A lot of hard hit balls, really looked really in control of his at bats, was very patient at the plate, waiting for a pitch to drive.
And he got up to AAA a little bit last year in only 10 games, but we really quietly excelled all year. You know, he didn't have the huge numbers, but at the same time, he hit 301, 368 OBP, you know, 10 home runs and six steals in 80 games at AA, like the overall 299 hitter across 112 games with 16 home runs. You know, that'll play. And I think he's never going to be a guy that stands out, maybe not an all-star type of guy, but definitely could be an above average offensive infielder that could hit for a solid average, good amount of pop, you know, maybe 20, 25 homer guy, a little bit of speed as well. Not a lot, but maybe a guy that adds like five or eight, which any speed helps is my kind of motto in fantasy. Even if you're just getting five or eight from a few guys, that definitely helps. So yeah, I think you hit it spot on. There's definitely a chance for him to break through, probably at third base from the looks of it. Maybe he could be as early as April. I think that's a possibility, but if I had to guess, probably more like a June ETA, but yeah, definitely a guy that I'd be taking in draft and holds.
Yeah. And I mean, his skill set isn't all that different from a guy like Jonathan India's.
That's pretty spot on.
We saw, I mean, I definitely did not see what India did last year coming. That one really took me by surprise, but I mean, Stott's probably a more well-thought-of prospect this time, this year than India was a year ago. So something to keep in mind. And I mean, I think we'll kind of know how close he is to the big leagues based on how the Phillies spend their offseason, because this is a team that's kind of in perpetual win-now mode. So if they do not address, I mean, they're going to need to sign like a couple infielders regardless, because they just don't have anyone backing up their starters. But, you know, if they only bring in like one or two guys and they're not big names on big contracts, I mean, I think we could see him up very early. These next two teams, Cleveland and Pittsburgh, have a couple guys apiece that I really like all four of these guys. And it's just a matter of, when are they up? Do they get to play every day? With Cleveland, you got Stephen Kwan and Richie Palacios. With Pittsburgh, you got Travis Swaggerty, who barely played last year, suffered a season-ending injury, but he's going to be ready to go for spring training. And Diego Castillo, who they acquired from the Yankees. Eric, out of those four guys, who is your favorite just for 2022?
Probably Stephen Kwan. I think he might have the easiest path to regular playing time the soonest. Out of those, like you mentioned, Swaggerty coming back from injury, that might delay him a bit. I think Palacios is definitely getting close, and he's been, you know, very impressive, especially out in the Arizona Fall League as well. Just really impressive wherever he goes. Solid little power speed blend there as well. I think the power is definitely ticking up with him. So like him long term. But yeah, Kwan, he's the one that kind of broke onto the map this year. Had some success before, you know, 2020, but more so in the low minors. Never had the big power. Still doesn't have big power, but power has come along. 12 home runs, 77 games, got 26 games in at AAA. So with how bad Cleveland's outfield is right now, I think there's a decent chance he's up pretty early. So out of these four, I like them all. And I've always been a pretty big Swaggerty guy as well. I think I would say, if I had to take one for 2022, I would take Stephen Kwan.
Yeah, I mean, these four are guys where, like, I want all four in a draft and hold, honestly. And I think they're all going to come dirt cheap, especially if you're doing a draft and hold this month, especially before, like, ADP gets out and stuff. I mean, you might be able to get all four of these guys after the 35th round or something like that. I don't know if that's realistic or not, but I mean, they are not big names by any stretch, especially for the redraft crowd. And like Cleveland just always has these super flawed and underwhelming outfield prospects, you know, the like Daniel Johnsons and Bradley Zimmers and Oscar Mercados. I mean, I think Miles Straw brings enough to the table where he should be able to play every day and lead off, but they might have two open spots in that outfield in spring training. So, you know, Kwan and Palacios, I mean, they're guys that control the strike zone. Swaggerty is the guy that sort of has some fantasy appeal, because, I mean, he could steal 20 bases. That's kind of what intrigues me about him, and he can do a little bit of everything else as well. And I mean, their outfield is far from established either. So I like all four of those guys: Stephen Kwan, Richie Palacios with Cleveland, Travis Swaggerty, Diego Castillo with the Pirates. With the Astros, I think we can assume Carlos Correa will not be back at shortstop. I think they are a contender to sign Marcus Semien because of how his pull side power would play with the Crawford boxes.
Oh yeah.
But let's say they just really think that one of Jeremy Peña or Pedro Leon, maybe even a combination of those guys, gives them what they need at shortstop next year. What's your read on how that would go between those two guys?
I'm leaning over towards Pedro Leon. I do like Jeremy Peña as well. And you know, a little bit of he's went to the University of Maine too, and I live in Maine, so it's always nice to see someone that comes out of Maine, even though obviously he's not from Maine, but nice to see a U Maine guy doing well in the minor leagues. It doesn't happen too often, but I'm more of a Leon guy. Obviously, he's kind of one of those boom or bust type of prospects. Obviously, he didn't have a lot of there's a huge layoff for him. 2019-2020, really two full years without having any competitive game action due to him coming over from Cuba, and then obviously the lockdown during the pandemic. And you saw that he was very rusty early on in the year. He was striking out a ton, not hitting for average, but like every month, like the average kept creeping up, the walk rate kept going up, the K rate came down considerably month to month, where he was like 22% K rate and like a 14% walk rate, and it's about a month before he went on the IL. So yeah, he's definitely very intriguing, and he nice little power speed blend. I think he could be like a 2020 type of guy, or at least flirt with it every each year. So we'll see how the hit tool comes along, see if those gains he made with the plate approach can stick next year. But I think there's definitely a chance he's their starting shortstop by midseason at the absolute latest, if they don't bring in, like I said, Semien will be a great fit. I've heard some faint Trevor Story rumblings. We'll see, obviously, but yeah, definitely a little more intrigued by Pedro Leon.
Yeah, I kind of think they bring in someone like Semien, but Jeremy Peña, I think he's got to be added to the 40 man before the Rule 5 draft, and it's funny, like, he had he really surged at AAA at the end of the year. And like at that same time, Pedro Leon was hurt. And I think a lot of people are going to read into how much Pedro Leon struggled in the Arizona Fall League. To me, that wasn't that surprising. I mean, I think you nailed it in terms of Leon's long-term upside, and he might be one of the biggest wild cards for 2022 redraft leagues, because he has this insane upside with the power and the speed. But I wonder if he doesn't need maybe a few more months at AAA before he's ready. So if they were to not bring anyone in, I could see Jeremy Peña getting that job pretty early on. Now, I think he would struggle to be a positive contributor offensively. But that might be one of the ones of all the ones we're talking about to really watch in spring training, because like that might tell us sort of how ready Pedro Leon is. And like, if Pedro Leon has a big spring training, then I'm going to start moving him up at least my sort of draft and hold board. But yeah, I mean, it might be a couple months before we see either of those guys. And again, they probably are at least going to be involved with some of these free agents. What's your just general take on Seth Beer? He's a guy who's just kind of been around forever. We've been waiting for the NL to get the DH so that he can be the Diamondbacks DH, at least against right-handed pitching. Is he boring? Is he exciting? Do you care about Seth Beer anymore?
I do. I really do. Like you said, he's a bat only guy that I'm glad that the DH has mostly come to the NL, because I was really kind of wondering where he fits in. They have to throw him in left field or something, or at first base, and take the negative there from his defensive value. But I still think he's going to be a, you know, a solid major league hitter. I don't think he's going to be a guy that stands out, you know, in any category, but he's shown at least an average hit tool, I think, maybe even you could say above average contact skills. I think he could be, you know, 270, 275 type of hitter. He's always shown a pretty solid walk rate as well. So I think the OBP will be decent to go along with that average. And then, you know, not a 30, 35 homer bat, but, you know, 25, maybe he runs into some 30 homer seasons at peak, maybe 31, 32. I don't think much more than that. But yeah, I think he's super intriguing, especially the DH comes. I think he could be in a 270, 20 type of bat next year with 500 plus plate appearances. So definitely one that I'm going to be keeping an eye on to see if that playing time opens up for him, whether, you know, they want him to start in the field if there's no DH, or obviously he's a prime candidate for their DH spot. So yeah, I'm definitely intrigued by Seth Beer, even if he's not the super sexy name, but that could make him a decent value in drafts too.
So these next two guys are fairly sexy. I'll say they're fairly sexy. Josh Lowe and Vidal Brujan with the Rays. You know, it's not that the Rays don't give their young players opportunities. It's just that it can be really frustrating in weekly leagues because they just are always oozing a ton of talent at all these positions. And you know that like getting five starts in a week is kind of the best case scenario, even for their best guys. Is there a way for Lowe and Brujan to be viable early in the season? I mean, anything we say here could just be completely irrelevant after the Rays make like five moves this offseason, but how do you see it playing out for Lowe and Brujan in 2022?
Man, I hope they do. I love both these guys, and they both bring speed. Obviously, Brujan more. I think he could be, you know, a 30-plus steal guy, but I think Lowe is at least a 20-steal guy with 15 to 20 home runs, and you've seen the hit tool, the contact skills have kind of improved incrementally as he's kind of climbed the ladder to the point where he was hitting for the highest average he's ever hit for in the minor leagues last year. He had a 291. He was his previous career best at any level was a 268. So I love Josh Lowe. I'm very, very high on Josh Lowe. I think he's very underrated in terms of just one of the top prospects in baseball for fantasy purposes. And obviously Brujan has that huge speed, but it's just so hard because obviously Brujan can play second or outfield, but I wish one of these guys was a corner infielder. That's really the best, you know, way for them to break in. And
well, yeah, you're not playing over G-Man Choi.
G-Man Choi. It's hard. Like, you can't not like G-Man Choi. Even he's had some clutch hits against my Red Sox. I still love the guy. It's look at that smile. It's infectious. But yeah, I think their two weakest spots are probably at the corners, even though, you know, there's no slight to G-Man Choi or Joey Wendell, but that'd be easier to break in there as opposed to trying to, you know, yeah, Brendan Lowe at second base. Obviously, he's, you know, not moving off of there anytime soon. Outfield, Arozarena, Kevin Kiermaier, his defensive value in center field is huge. And you got, you know, Meadows out there too. He'll DH some as well, but yeah, it's just I don't see where they break in early in the season, unfortunately, without an injury. But there's definitely guys, if I have, you know, deep benches, deep rosters, draft and holds, definitely two guys that I'm definitely going to try to get everywhere just because of their offensive upside. And it might just take an injury or two. And we know Austin Meadows hasn't really been the most durable guy in his career either. So I think it might take an injury, but I'm definitely super intrigued. But I love both these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I would 100% expect this Rays depth chart to look different in some way, you know, 3 months from now. They always make some moves. You know, I imagine a couple of these guys are approaching arbitration. So, I mean, that's terrifying for the Rays. So,
they're scared.
You know, look, Josh Lowe is big league ready.
Agreed.
I'm a little lower on Brujan's bat than I am with Lowe. And it's not like Lowe's not going to hit like 275, but I think Lowe is one of those sort of rare guys where even if he sits against lefties, I think he could go 20-20 in his prime because of just that power speed. And I mean, he's going to be more of an OBP guy than a batting average guy. So I hope that they just suck it up and attach a prospect to get off of Kiermaier or whatever they got to do, because I think Lowe is ready. I think you could break Brujan in you know, just kind of a util role. I mean, I don't think that'd be the end of the world. Obviously for fantasy, it wouldn't be ideal, but yeah, I mean, I think in draft and hold, you might be able to get these guys at a value, just because right now it looks like they're super blocked, and they might not be super blocked when we get to spring training. But again, I mean, I wouldn't reach for either guy.
Agreed.
I'm kind of a Jake Berger guy, which I never thought I'd say. I didn't like him in the draft, but after watching him at AAA a bit last year and in the majors, I kind of like Jake Berger. He is extremely blocked, and I don't see that changing. Romy Gonzalez, Micker Adolfo, also pretty blocked with the White Sox. The Cardinals, you've got Juan Yepez, Brendan Donovan, Alec Burleson. They're all pretty blocked. I mean, we just talked about Nolan Gorman. Where the hell is he going to play? If we can't find a spot for Nolan Gorman, right, probably not going to find a spot for these guys. Do you see sort of any guy on the Cardinals or the White Sox that you love the skill and you're just like, well, if you could find a spot, or are these guys just ones to kind of forget about for 2022?
The one I like the most, and he's gotten a lot of hype, he's blowing up on Twitter right now, Juan Yepez. I saw him out in the AFL. He just looks the part of a major league hitter. Obviously, he's kind of one of those guys where he doesn't really have a definitive defensive home. He's played some of the corners, some outfield as well. See where he ends up long-term, but I would love for him to get some time at the major league level this year. But like you said, if Nolan Gorman's not a sure bet for playing time, you know, Juan Yepez, as good as he's been, he's behind Gorman in that depth chart. And so maybe it takes an injury for him to kind of break through, but that's the one I'd be most intrigued by, just because what he's shown, the ability hit for average, hit for power, and take the walk when he needs to. Yeah, definitely a name that I'm keeping an eye on, see how that playing time situation shakes out for him.
So you follow the Red Sox pretty closely. You know, I saw a report that they would be open to bringing Kyle Schwarber back, even after JD Martinez opted in. I mean, I think there's a lot to like with how Bobby Dalbec finished the year. I am not a Jaren Duran guy. I just don't think he's a starting outfielder in the big leagues. And I think on a team like the Red Sox, you can't expect a guy like that to be given a job right out of spring training. You know, Jeter Downs was terrible until the Arizona Fall League, and then he was good. Do you see any appeal with Duran or Downs for 2022?
I think a little more appeal with Jeter Downs, and with Duran, I'm with you. It's been a definitely a love-hate relationship for me with Duran. Obviously, he had the big start to 2019 down in high A. Then he got up to double A, which is my home league, the Eastern League, here in Portland, Maine. And he was terrible. He looked overmatched. He was just turning everything over. So many weak ground outs to second base. And I saw him 20-ish times that second half of the season. So I'm there multiple times a week. And he just looked overmatched. Then he got the hand slot change with the swing mechanics, and the power got unlocked, and he got excited again. And then he looked like crap in the major. So I agree. I honestly don't think he's ever going to be a starter for the Red Sox, maybe on a lesser team. I could see the Red Sox trading him. I don't know what they're going to be doing in free agency here in this offseason, but I could see them trading him maybe for a pitcher or another bat. We'll see how they do. If they bring back Schwarber, I think that'll be huge. But they have plenty of guys playing in the outfield already. Like, you already have two guys locked in. The Verdugo, Renfro, without question, locked into that outfield with what they bring both offensively and defensively. And then you can play, Kike out there as well. You can play some center. So I just don't see Duran getting much of a shot, especially early in the year. But Downs, with what he showed in the AFL, where he was one of the best hitters out there, if he has a big spring training, could take that second base spot, especially if they don't bring back Schwarber, and that moves Kike more so to outfield as opposed to second base. That could open up second base for him. We have, Christian Arroyo. I don't think he should be taking that starting job and running with it. So a big spring, you could see Jeter Downs maybe get that starting gig. Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, and to your point, this very early ADP that I got from Zach, Jeter Downs going inside the top 500 of both of these early draft and holds, a higher ADP than Nolan Gorman. So, you know, people buy into the AFL results with a lot of these guys. So if you want Jeter Downs, you might not be able to get him as late as you think. I probably won't take him inside the top 500, but that's where you might have to take him. I really wanted to quickly just mention these Angels guys, Brendan Davis, not to be confused with Brendan Davis of the Cubs, but Brendan with a D, Michael Stefanik. Both of these guys are infielders. They both raked at AAA. Their bats seem like they're ready for the big leagues. Stefanik is a really bad defender, which is partly why he never got a shot last year. But I don't really see any way for those guys to break in with the Angels, especially given that they are sort of the Phillies of the AL, where they're just in perpetual win now mode. But I did just want to mention those guys for people in draft and holds. Brendan Davis and Michael Stefanik, both guys, strong hit tools, strong power, or at least the potential for those two traits. So just wanted to mention those. This next tier, I labeled opportunity plus low probability. And what I mean by that is, like, these guys all have a fairly clear path to playing time early in the season, but I just don't think they're ready to be positive offensive contributors in the big leagues. Is there anyone that I have in this tier where you would maybe take offense to that characterization and roll the dice on them in a draft and hold?
Not really. You know, the Rockies guys, you know, intrigue me a little bit. I can see them getting a shot. I know people are gonna be like, oh, here's Eric going to the Rockies wall again. Trust me, this is not a, you know, Garrett Hampson situation with me. I don't love these guys, but I could see, you know, a scenario where they break in early. You know, if Brendan Rodgers, you know, he looks like the starter at second base, but he's had his durability issues. So maybe someone can break in, or the outfield right now is Connor Joe. Yeah, nice little flash in the pan. Is he for real? Who knows? Blackman's getting older. I wouldn't be surprised if they just dealt him this offseason. That wouldn't shock me at all. Sim Hilliard, still kind of like, but obviously very inconsistent. So I could see a future where they're one of these guys is up by the All-Star break, but that's probably about it.
I mean, I think with just that 30-second answer, you've spent more time thinking about this than the Rockets have themselves. So
probably, yeah.
I don't know if it's even productive to go down that rabbit hole.
It's probably not.
Talking about Rocky prospect playing time. What about this next tier? I mean, in this one, we've got a lot of like big name prospects, like top 100 type of guys who maybe had really strong showings at AA, but not going to debut in the first half or at least the first couple of months. But do you see anyone on here where maybe you take issue with that assessment?
No, not really. I would love to see, I love Miguel Vargas and Michael Bush, but obviously it's taken up until September for Gavin Lux to get time. And now it looks like he might finally be the unquestioned starter at second base. So I don't know where those guys fit in without an injury, though. I love, you know, their ability to hit for, you know, average. Bush has a great OBP, both got solid pop. Maybe Freeman, I love Freeman's hit tool, you know, a little bit of power, speed as well. I think he could maybe be a guy that, with that high hit tool, he's a guy that can transition pretty more easily than most, I think, to the major league. So maybe a Freeman could be intriguing. But outside of that, like, you know, Peraza, I love Peraza. I just don't see an opening with him in the, I think they're a lock to bring in one of those big five. Probably it's probably Seager or maybe Correa. I think any of the one of those five is going to be in there with Gleyber shifting over to second base. So I just don't see Peraza getting that shot, unfortunately. But a lot of intriguing names here. You know, Perdomo, I think, could take over for Nick Ahmed at some point. I think he's a better long-term option. So he's one maybe I'll take a flyer on in deeper draft and holds that I think I can get pretty
late just because he doesn't have that huge sexy name or the sexy profile. He's more like that high floor, better in real life type of guy. But yeah, outside of that, there's all the other guys I'm not really that interested in for 2022.
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees just don't really graduate good hitting prospects anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Glaber obviously was good as a rookie. Aaron Judge has been good. But yeah, I mean, I think my buddy Todd Whitestone, who's a Yankees fan, was sort of questioning the idea of why they would go after one of those big five because they've got Volpe on the way, because they've got Oswald Peraza, who's close to ready. But it's the Yankee way. You got to bring in a big stud on a huge contract and make your prospects really earn it.
Yeah, like in that position, that shortstop for the Yankees, that's like one of the more, probably the top five most premier positions in all of sports, I think. Like Dallas Cowboys quarterback, you know, like Lakers point guard, you know, these types of positions, like Yankee shortstop, just because of Derek Jeter, he made that the position that it is now. So yeah, I think maybe I'm reading too much into that, but yeah, I think they're definitely in the market for one of those five. Who it is, I don't know. I think Seager would be, not to get off topic, but Seager would be super intriguing with that lefty power in Yankee Stadium. But I think, yeah, definitely someone's going to come in and that's going to unfortunately block Peraza and Volt for at least a little bit.
Yeah, and you mentioned Tyler Freeman. The Cleveland infield it's kind of a mess because, you know, you got Andrés Giménez and Amed Rosario who, you know, Rosario showed flashes last year. Giménez was a pretty big flop, but they probably are invested enough in Giménez to give him another shot this year. Then they've got Gabriel Arias, who, you know, Gabriel Arias might be one of the more underrated prospects in the game right now, just because I never hear him talked about. And he was really solid at AAA last year as like a 21-year-old, if I'm not mistaken. And so I just wonder if maybe he would get the shot before Freeman. And of course, Freeman, you know, he had the injury and that kind of cost him some developmental time last year. And then you've got Brayan Rocio breathing down his neck as well. So, I mean, how do you sort of see everything playing out with that Cleveland infield in 2022 and then maybe even looking ahead to 2023?
Yeah, it's very intriguing because I like all these guys and I like Arias too. And obviously, you know, Freeman and Rocio are both well in semi-top 100 and Rocio in semi-top 50. So I hope that they can find a way to make this work because I'm not, you know, Amed Rosario is decent. I won't go higher than decent on him. Giménez could be decent, but he hasn't shown nearly as much, even though he's a very good defender. But I think maybe he kind of is better suited as just a backup middle infielder, you know, defensive replacement type of guy. I don't think he hits enough to be an everyday, you know, starter at the major league level, unfortunately. But yeah, I think Arias probably is up first. He's the closest. He's played the most at the highest level in AAA. Freeman's only had some time in AA. So I think in terms of like pecking order for terms of ETA, it's probably Arias, then Freeman, then Rocio. Even though Rocio and Freeman could be pretty close. But long-term, I like Rocio the most. I think this, you know, while he doesn't stand out in any one area, he just kind of does everything well. Hits for average, you know, some decent pop, sneaky pop, decent speed as well. So I think long term, I think you see these two of these three guys as their starting middle infield. I just couldn't really tell you which two it'll be.
I think if everything goes perfectly, and this would even be kind of my guess if I was to kind of think about the way that front office might be thinking about it, you would be heading into the 2024 season with Rocio as your everyday shortstop and Freeman as your everyday second baseman. It's just a matter of kind of getting to that point. And then you kind of need none of Rosario, Giménez, Arias. I'd even throw Owen Miller at second base. Like I kind of like Owen Miller's bat still, even though he didn't do too well in the majors last year. They've just got these four to five guys ahead of Rocio and Freeman where, like if one of them, you know, emerges as like a three and a half win player, then, you know, it's going to be tough to dislodge them, but that'll be interesting to kind of see how that unfolds. Is there anyone else you want to talk about that we haven't covered in terms of a hitting prospect who could make waves in 2022?
I don't really see it. You know, maybe one of the Marlins guys, you know, Burdick, Blade, or maybe, you know, Ramos missed a lot of time, but I think that's about it. Looking at all these other guys, I don't see anybody that's really going to be anybody I'm targeting this year. So maybe I throw a late round draft and hold on one of those three that I just mentioned, Burdick, Blade, or Ramos. And Florial, you know, has that power, but I just doubt he gets a chance. So, yeah, I think we pretty much got them all.
All right. Well, if anyone wants to see basically the entire podcast outline, it is my most recent Farm Futures article, which you can find up on rotowire.com, rotowire.com/pod for a free 10-day trial. Eric, you're one of the best in the biz. I always kind of marvel at, you know, you're one of the nicest guys too in the industry. Well, really. And I just marvel at how much patience you have for people on Twitter. I think that I do a pretty good job of responding to as many people as I can. And like, if I ever don't respond to someone on Twitter, it's just cause I forgot. But like Eric, I feel like you're responding to like a tweet every couple minutes. And I mean, you're a man of the people. And I think that's why you have such a devoted following, is you're there. You respond to anyone. You don't like, I've seen people come at you for like, sometimes you just get into trouble because of how nice you are about responding to people. And then people get mad at you for responding to questions on Twitter. I think it's really cool that you're that accessible. Do you want to tell people where they can find your work and what the most recent stuff you've been working on is?
Yeah, you know, and thanks for that. That was the respect is mutual. I think you're one of the best out there. You were a guy I looked at your work before I got into the industry myself. So definitely the respect is mutual. And yeah, when I broke in, that was one of the things I wanted to do, was just be accessible. I didn't think it would turn into what it is now, but I just love talking baseball, so that definitely helps. But it's definitely like right now, it's a little bit of a reprieve where it's not as many questions now. Obviously, in November is kind of like the deadest month of the year for baseball in terms of fantasy. So, but yeah, thanks again for having me on. You can find me on Twitter at EricCross04, Fantrax HQ for my written work. Also, Patreon.com/FantraxToolshed for both more content from myself and Chris Clegg, my podcast partner. And also, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book will be coming out in about a little over a month. I think it's December 15th. Don't hold me to that. It's right around that date, usually is, that Joe Pizzapia puts out. A lot of great people in there, like, you know, Paul Spohr and Casey Bubba, many others. So a lot of great stuff in that as well. So yeah, but again, thanks for having me on, James. Always a pleasure talking with you.
Awesome, Eric. We'll talk soon. Thanks again.
Thanks.